on the people. Dancing on the people like I.
Everybody in the booth can tell myself.
Hey, SFQBs, this is episode 200. 200. Yeah, congratulations, fellas.
All right, we're moving along.
Still like you guys. I still like you guys.
You're on thin ice today.
It's not like because we won yesterday.
Wow, 200 episodes. It all came out of a text chain that we thought we were absolutely hysterical commenting on sports, and we think we are still hysterical. And I don't know, 200, what is that? How many years now?
Four.
54 years.
Started it moving on. Like January of COVID. January 21.
Really, so, crazy.
Yeah, here we are.
Hey, we have a lot of fans that have been with us from the very, very beginning. And a lot of newcomers that have come along recently too. But for anybody, whether it's from the very beginning or just now, thank you for being along for the ride this whole time. We have a blast with it. We hope you have a lot of fun with it too. We're looking forward to episode 300, 400, 500. So stay on board. We really appreciate everybody's support.
Yeah. Well said, House. Well said. Listen, I'm in trial, so I'm not going to stay on very long, but I did want to get on because I have to come here and congratulate House and the Eagles on an absolutely just dominant performance in the NFC Championship game. It did play out the way I said, the way I thought it would. You scored more points than I thought, but pretty much what I just thought, you were the better roster, better team, pretty much what happened. But I do have a question that I want to ask, one for Milk, one for Pope, and one for Phelan, Rooster. And then Toby, I'm gonna have to go, but I did want to congratulate you. And I just want to know from each of you, Milk, what do you think Baker Mayfield could do in that offense? Rooster, what do you think Daniel Jones could do in that offense? And Pope, my God, wouldn't you love to see Dakota in that offense? I just really want to throw that out there.
Wow, it's a loaded question. Wow.
Run and I just hide.
Think, I wow. just think maybe 75, 80 points yesterday or so. Hey, listen, congrats on 200. House, congrats on the Super Bowl. I am out of here. I got to get ready for trial.
Love you, bro.
Go get him, Bison.
Good luck.
Raise hell in court.
Drops a bomb and just leaves.
Yeah, just a shit sandwich.
Wow. Well, listen, for our new fans, we're the SMQBs. We're five guys who are friends from all over the country. We've got Milk here from Tampa, Pope from Dallas, House is from Philadelphia, so we're going to dedicate this entire episode to a case study in the insanity that is a Philadelphia fan.
Bison, 200.
Bison just checked out. He's from D.C. and Miami, and I'm Rooster from Richmond, Virginia. So, guys, let's start out talking about these conference championship games. I am going to compliment the Eagles, and I guarantee you House is going to take offense to this compliment.
Course, manufacture something.
So everybody's out there saying, oh, you know, four turnovers by the Commanders led to 28 points. That's the most important aspect of this game. I would say the reason there were four turnovers is because of the Eagles' number one defense. The defense had the Commanders rattled early, and you combine that with they have the best offensive line in football, and they have Saquon Barkley. What else do you need? All three of those things hit extremely well, and it didn't matter. The turnovers didn't really matter. The Eagles were just going to win that game playing the way they did with that offensive line, with Saquon behind it, and the D playing like that. Now, I'm not trying to take anything away from Jalen Hurts, but he didn't have to do much. He just didn't because, I mean, the first time he gave the ball to Saquon, he took it to the house from almost 70 yards out. Set the tone.
The best game he's had in, like, weeks, and I'm his biggest critic. I loved Jalen's effort last year, or yesterday.
He did really well when he had to. My point is, when the defense is playing like that and the offensive line is moving it out for Saquon, There's it's really hard to stop that team. And hats off to Howie Roseman for having the foresight to take a Mekhi Becton, who was a high pick by the Jets and just never really panned out as a left tackle, turning him into like the biggest, meanest, baddest guard in football right now. I mean, why didn't anyone else figure that out? He's a big dude, and he's opening up massive holes for Saquon Barkley. So, House, are you offended that I didn't say that Jalen Hurts is the whole reason you won?
You know what, gents? I cannot be offended today. It's not possible. You can say whatever that. Yeah, you please do. But I listen, I don't know. There are so many things that I can say about this. It was a joy to be there, an absolute masterclass put on in all three phases of the game, but no greater masterclass, like you're pointing to, than Howie Roseman. It was not lost on many of the fans that we are just 2 years separated from a very different offense and a very different defense making it to two separate Super Bowls. There are a lot of different players on both sides of the ball that were contributing to this playoff run. You pointed to Mekhi Becton, but if you didn't see Zach Bond flying around on every single defensive play, that guy, I've never seen in a long time a nose for the ball in all of the NFL. This guy, he'll be way up there for defensive player of the year. He's an all-pro linebacker 1 year removed from being kind of like an also-ran on the Saints.
Right.
And Fangio saw him and said to Howie, I think this guy can fit in on our defense. And he had an incredible game.
Both your rookie D-backs played exceptionally well.
Yeah, I mean, Cooper DeJean is an incredible, incredible get. And Quinyon Mitchell gave up nothing. I mean, Quinyon Mitchell lined up against Terry McLaurin on 36 of his 48 routes, aligning coverage, and he gave up nothing. The one route where McLaurin did score that Quinyon was not on him, he shut him down and also got that great interception. I agree with Milk. I thought Jalen had a phenomenal game. And while he didn't have to do too much, the game was hanging in the balance when Sirianni called that incredibly ballsy call on their own 45 or fourth down. And in one of the prettiest passes of the year, I mean, Jalen laid that ball perfectly in A.J. Brown's hands. Yep. And I think that was kind of one of the just kill shots of the game. But, you know, I could say so much more, and we'll talk some more about the game. But I said to you guys by text, and I turned in my seats yesterday after that run on the very first play of scrimmage, and I said, I have never seen a player just will his team through the playoffs and said, just give me the rock, give me the ball, give me the puck, give me whatever it is, I got it. 99% of running backs get tackled on that play. There were about three defenders who had a chance to tackle him.
Yep.
But Saquon is a man.
One of them was Bobby Wagner, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saquon is a man possessed. And one of the most impressive parts of his game last night was his blocking. He was insane in his blocking, yep, as well, yep, as his running. And he's just a man possessed. And, you know, we went around, and I'll never forget when, and I hate the Rangers, but when Messier put the Rangers on his back in 94 to end a very, very long drought for the Rangers. And, you know, Milk pointed to Brady, clearly has put multiple teams on his back.
Hello, MJ.
Of course, I think MJ and LeBron and Steph have all been capable of doing that. There's no question about it. Saquon's up there in that kind of performance, and the great part is he's humble and says there's still one more that counts for my dream to come true.
You could argue Mahomes too.
Sure, sure.
Stats don't lie,
and it's not just offensive line, by the way. I saw for the first time yesterday, and I don't watch as much as you do. I mean, he's so fucking hard to tackle. Like, the moves he makes are just, that's why it's not just gaping holes, although that does help. He's hard to bring down.
He can make an incredible move running his absolute fastest, which, you know, a lot of backs have to slow down a little bit to put on some of these moves. Bison and I were at a game a few years ago at a Commanders game against the Giants, and it was freezing cold and we wanted to leave. It was just a bad game. And fortunately we stayed and we saw Saquon break off a similar run where he juked the safety at top speed, and the guy came up with nothing but air, didn't even lay a finger on him, and took it to the house for like 68 yards.
He's definitely the most elusive back since Barry Sanders at that level.
Yeah,
Barry Sanders could make you whiff just like Saquon.
And I was also say,
speed burst too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And I'll say this final stat line for Mr. Run and Hide Bison, who I do want to say something in a second about the Commanders, but Jalen Hurts' last three seasons, two-time NFC champion, two-time Pro Bowl, All-Pro one season, 121 total touchdowns, which is second among all quarterbacks in the NFL, 51 rushing touchdowns, the most by any player, and 42 wins, the second among quarterbacks, and the first quarterback in 33 years to reach a Super Bowl after losing their first Super Bowl. He's ended that curse. If results are what matters, then Jalen Hurts is a winner. But I will say this.
He's a
the Commanders are one of those teams, like we saw it a couple years ago, where the 49ers came up just short and then made that next leap. I thought it was maybe going to be the Lions this year. The Commanders are not going to disappear. I mean, Nace has told us a million times they're like a gazillion dollars under the cap, and they've got, you know, a franchise quarterback. They've got young studs on both sides of the ball, that they've had a nice draft. They've got a management going in the right direction. And I know that there's no consolation because losing doesn't matter. You know, if you heard last night, you know, Brady said something like, I really don't remember any of the AFC championships in the Super Bowls that I lost. It doesn't matter. You have to win the whole thing. If you win the AFC championship and then lose a Super Bowl, it doesn't matter. So I know there's little consolation prize to the Commanders, but that is an incredible, incredible sports story for this year and the run they had. And they were very good yesterday, and then it just got overmatched.
Yep.
Yeah. Do this, though. Compare the fan base for the two losers yesterday. The Washington Commander fan base is hopeful, and they were playing with house money, and they knew it. The Buffalo Bills fan base is crushed and depressed, and they don't know if they'll ever find a way out of the hole.
Well, they've lost more Super Bowls than most teams have won, and they just can't get over the hump.
They've lost
and get past Kansas City
and chips now to Mahomes.
Right. They must feel cursed.
You know, we've seen this happen in sports. Talk about Jordan and the Bulls. You know, there are certain great teams that their timing was just really, really off. You know, Karl Malone and Stockton could never get one. I mean, Barkley could never. There are certain great, great teams and players, wrong time, wrong place. And I hope for Bills fans it's not this way, but as long as Mahomes is around, the Bills could be going through that era where they're just not great enough. They're great, but just not great enough because they got to face.
You got a Mahomes dynasty in the way.
They're also like in the wrong division. Like if we look at the NFC over the last 5 years, there's how many teams have gone to the Super Bowl? Four?
I mean, the wrong conference.
Conference.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like you have to, you go 14-3 this year. No, not good enough. You got to go on the road. You got to win in Arrowhead so hard. And meanwhile, the NFC has had now the Eagles are twice in 2 years, but we've had like five teams since 2000 in the Super Bowl.
And it's we had a team that won 14 games and didn't win the division in the NFC.
That's true. But, you know, it's like you have to go 15-2.
I don't want to jump too far ahead because we'll talk about Chiefs Bills, but I know part of the thing that we want to share with fans today is some coaching carousel and some changes. I want to ask you guys, thinking about the Commanders being in this game, how much of their win over Detroit was because the offensive and defensive coordinator had their feet out the door? because I think that's a real serious problem that's developing in the NFL. I think it hurt the Eagles against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl when Gannon was already out the door to the Cardinals, and they just did not have their best defensive game after playing very well defensively for the year. I really am curious. I mean, I'm so impressed by the Commanders' win over the Lions, but part of me is asking, like, how much of that had to do with Johnson and Glenn already out the door, who now have jobs at the Bears and the Jets? What do you guys think about that?
Well, are you saying that the players knew they were leaving and it affected their play? I mean, I think the reality there was we kind of knew going into it. The Lions' defense was very hurt.
Yeah.
And I think it finally showed. And, like, they got beat. And they put up a ton of points.
But Johnson made some weird calls. So
he did. But I mean, Goff had a shitty game. I mean,
hey, Goff had a shitty game.
Johnson's not taking the snaps. Goff just had a really shitty game.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it does affect a little bit, but I think they just got.
Did you guys think about the Commanders' opening drive going down, marching down the field, 17 plays? I think they converted 3 fourth downs, right?
Yeah.
And then they kick a field goal after all that. I thought that was horrendous.
Fourth and two from the 15-yard line, and they know the Eagles are at home and going to be able to score 7. I don't understand why they didn't go for the kill shot there and get another fourth down and get 7 on the board first.
Right, I don't understand that either. To see what they've done the entire playoffs, go for it at ridiculous times on fourth down.
Yeah, that's the, like, problem. If you don't go for it on a fourth down, then you kind of upset the whole analytics.
Yeah,
where you always go for it
on that opening drive.
I converted on a certain amount of time.
I didn't think Cliff Kingsbury had his best game. There were a couple of running plays that were poorly designed. There was no element of surprise, no misdirection, and the running back just got killed.
Guys, I told you when they beat the Lions that it was coaching malpractice, that the Lions were not prepared for the kind of, I'm not saying this pejoratively, the dink it.
We're losing you, House.
Oh, can you? I was saying that the Lions game we had previously talked about was coaching malpractice, that they were not prepared for the Jaden Daniel 3-step drop, short little pass out in the flat. What made Kingsbury neutralize yesterday is the Eagles swarmed to the ball. There's a great video today by Dan Orlovsky breaking down some film where it showed the Eagles defense almost in complete synchronicity with literally their footsteps, how they attacked that ball on those little short little drop passes.
Right.
Kingsbury did not change up the same game.
Go long. You have to throw some long passes when they're doing it.
Yeah. We commented about that. Like for the first half, he was afraid to let Daniels unleash down the field.
And yes,
they were never going to beat the Eagles unless you had some explosive plays.
But how much is that the Eagles defense? Like I just really, really good defenses can make a good offense look like bad, right?
And yeah.
I just think they were so prepared. They were all into that first drive. It was so hard. Yeah, they were converting.
Yeah.
It just looks so hard. Get a first down.
Didn't it remind you of Notre Dame on their first drive against Ohio State? Like Notre Dame had 10 minutes to get the ball all the way down, but they were exhausted after that.
They were barely getting him, and it's just
by the Commanders. And then one play, Billy gets a touchdown, and then they're back out.
Yep.
Well, so the Chiefs now are going for a three-peat. They have won 17 consecutive one-possession games dating back to last year. And, you know, everybody wants to pile on the favoritism they get from the refs, but I think a lot of it has to do with what we were just talking about, coaching. You combine Andy Reid's play calling and Spagnuolo's defensive play calling. That was a masterpiece, that game.
Yep.
And I think that the Bills coach was way out coached in that game. Why in the world was James Cook on the bench several times in the red zone? I don't understand that. After he'd already scored a touchdown in the red zone.
They didn't give him the ball after he had two touchdowns of over 100 yards when it really mattered.
So, Rooster, you will know this. Steve Spagnuolo is exhibit A for the kind of coach that is the remarkable assistant but can't be a head coach.
Right.
Pretty failed in New York. But, boy, what he has done with the Chiefs defense this year, they're scary good. They are really scary good because he has these blitz packages where you just they come in waves, but very, very quick waves. And the quarterback just gets so flummoxed. I thought that, you know, I give it to the Bills that they were hanging until the very end in that game with some great throws and great catches, particularly, you know, from Mac Hollins. But I thought they defended Josh Allen as well as anybody has all year.
You also have to give credit to the Chiefs GM, just like Philly's GM. They made the decision to go ahead and pay Chris Jones, and the draft of George Karlaftis was a brilliant pick. That guy has turned out to be fabulous.
And they got Worthy at the end of the first round, which was,
that was huge.
We were all saying, oh, I can't believe they got Worthy.
Yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches to get Worthy. He's a dangerous, dangerous player. Perfect player in Reed's offense. Perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know what Romo said was interesting is that from a coaching perspective, Rooster, they did study the tapes on Josh Allen, and on his fourth and, you know, not really a tush push, but his fourth down.
Always goes left guard.
Always goes left. And so they stacked it. They stacked it twice, and they did not.
And they never changed it.
And they never, they never changed it. Or they did. So, you know, I mean, I think you could argue that Josh got the first down on that huge fourth down. I'm not going to, you know, say it's the ref's conspiracy, but I think he got it. But it shouldn't have been that close. If he dove to the right or dove to the front, to the middle, downhill, then they would have got the first down because he's such a big guy. How do you not get it when you're about that?
Yeah.
Right. So anybody else have anything on the championship round?
I know that we're going to have a – go ahead, Pope.
No, I mean, let's put a bow on that game. I think there's some stats, though, that just jump out at you when we talk about Mahomes versus Allen. You know, in four playoff games, how close they are in stats. I mean, points – 113 for Allen, 139 for Mahomes, 1,306 yards for Allen, 1,299 for Mahomes, 11 touchdowns for Allen, 12 for Mahomes, one turnover each. Just shows you that football, just a game of inches, that Mahomes, though, has been able to pull it out four straight times against Allen is truly remarkable.
We'll have a full – go ahead, Milk.
No, I just said it also shows you how, the players are important, but look at all these teams that make the Super Bowl every year. They're so well run, and we'll get into new coaches and GMs and everything. They're so well run from top to bottom. The GMs in both instances, KC and Philly, outstanding GMs, great ownership. You know, it's a lot to get to the Super Bowl. It's not just having Mahomes and Hurts and Saquon. And well-run organizations get there, and poorly run organizations are, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
One more stat on Mahomes. He is now second behind Brady in wins in the playoffs. That's 17. Brady has 35. He passed Joe Montana and leaves behind Bradshaw, Elway, and Manning, who had 14. He's on his way, guys.
And he just had a kid.
If he gets the Super Bowl,
he's been to five Super Bowls and he's not 30 yet.
It's crazy.
So, well, I will say that Mahomes is one of eight quarterbacks in NFL history to reach multiple Super Bowls in their first five seasons. They include Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, Kurt Warner, Troy Aikman, John Elway, Patrick Mahomes, and one Jalen Hurts. Pretty heady list.
And how about the stat house you had yesterday that Hurts has been now to more Super Bowls than Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Milk, and Justin Herbert combined?
Joe Burrow. Don't worry.
Results matter.
Yep.
Congrats again.
So
fun.
So we're going to move on to a segment that we call Who Are You Going to Take to the Bar? And this is a segment that where we think about someone who would be very interesting to talk to. And we take that person to the bar and chat them up about sports. So Milk, tell us who you're taking to the bar this week.
Well, we're getting near baseball season, and I'm going to take our owner of my Tampa Bay Rays, Stu Sternberg, because he keeps fucking around with this new stadium deal, and I'm getting tired of it. And they have until March 31st to commit $700 million to building a new stadium by 2029, and they have not committed it yet. No one knows what's going on. It's a complete disaster. It's an embarrassment, and I'm sick of it. And while this sounds like a punch in the face, I actually do want to sit with him and have a cocktail and get him to tell me what is going on, because this has been going on too long.
Is it possible you would punch him at the bar as well, though?
I might punch him if we have too much to drink.
Yeah, if you have too many Mick Ultras, man.
We don't have a roof on our current stadium. Do something.
House, who are you taking to the bar?
I mean, obviously, I'm tempted to take a whole bunch of Philadelphia Eagles, but I want to give a little bit of a teaser for something we're going to talk about on this pod, and I want to take Jimmy Butler to the bar. And I know he's got plenty of time on his hands, and I think he's gotten a rap in this league from maybe going back to the Minnesota Timberwolves of just being a terrible teammate and a cancer in the locker room and chemistry. I got to understand this guy and why it is that this keeps happening. And he's kind of this wandering nomad. He's got so much talent, but we'll talk about this a little bit, but I'd really like to sit down with Jimmy Butler, because I think that kind of character would be a very, very interesting person to hear their view of the world and why it is that he's entitled to behave like this.
Well, what is your understanding of why he's suspended?
Well, the latest is that he walked out of a practice.
Yeah, conduct detrimental to the team, I think.
Yeah. I mean,
it's indefinite.
He's looking for an extension, and they won't give it to him.
We're going to press pause and come back to the Jimmy thing, but that's who I'm taking right. The bar.
What about you, Pope?
I'm going to take Clark Hunt, because two interesting conversations with him. One, obviously, is he is on the precipice of something that no other owner has ever been able to do, which is get a three-peat for a Super Bowl, the Super Bowl that was named by his father, Lamar. So that's quite a special opportunity for him. And I'm sure he's got some opinions on what's going on with his neighbor down the street in Highland Park, Jerry Jones, and his just, I don't know if anybody saw the press conference today, but what a debacle that was. Jerry was almost in tears talking about how he really wants to coach, but decided he wasn't going to coach because he didn't want to make as little money as coaches make, and he wanted a big house and a plane. And then Steven said something to the effect of, well, I understand we're in a drought, and did air quotes talking about not having an NFC championship or Super Bowl for 30 years. I mean, it's a fucking disaster in Dallas, and I'm sure Clark has some opinions about that and some chuckles.
All right. I'm going to take Andy Reid to the bar. I'd love to pick his brain about the reason for, well, let's back up. He unquestionably is a better coach now than he was when he was on the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
He is. I mean, his play calling is magnificent, and he's not having these end of game problems with clock management like he used to. And I just wonder what he attributes that. You know, he's had a lot of turmoil in his life since he left the Eagles with one of his sons. And I just feel like he has a different perspective on life, and it's helping him be a better coach. I'd like to know if he agrees with that and if he would share that with us.
Rooster, make sure that the bar serves cheeseburgers.
All right. All right. So speaking of Jimmy Butler, let's move on. Jimmy Butler is in a dispute with the Heat over their unwillingness to extend his contract on the, another 2 years for $111 million. So my question is this. If you're the owner of another team, like, say, the Suns, do you want Jimmy Butler on your team? House?
I mean, I think that Jimmy Butler's fourth quarter talent and his defensive skills, his shot creating ability, it's hard to deny that if you're very close to getting over the hump. You better just know what you get. I mean, it could be as much as a rent a player for the next few months. Now, you know, we've seen a comparison over in the Clippers right now with James Harden, who carried the same kind of baggage. And now the offense is kind of running around Harden and things seem like they're settling down for him. So maybe he doesn't wear out his welcome mat there. But they gave Jimmy that in Miami. They gave Jimmy and they said, Jimmy left Philly. He said he wanted his own team. He took them all the way to the NBA championship. Why is that not enough? Like they're not that far away. So just know what you're getting, but I would take them, sure.
Yeah,
I would make the analogy to Kyrie Irving, because nobody wanted him, thought he was total head case, toxic for the locker room, and look how he's being able to assimilate into the Dallas Maverick, you know, lineup and be buddies with Luka and he's in a good spot. So, you know, there might be a place out there for Butler. It's just kind of hard to know.
Jimmy didn't just take the Heat to the championship. He put them on his back and almost single-handedly won that. He did single-handedly knock out the Celtics that year, which has a team full of stars. I mean, the guy, you can't get better effort out of a player than you get from him. He's tough as nails. And he's diving on the floor. He's doing whatever he has to do to win. And I think he gets a bad rap. I think that Pat Riley needs to tone it down a little bit with his own players. He's too much of a hard ass. And you know what was Jimmy's problem in Philly? He went to management and said, Ben Simmons isn't the man. I can't play with this guy. And he was right.
He was.
They chose the wrong horse. They said, all right, you're out and we'll keep Simmons.
Is this about money? What does he want now?
He wants a $111 million 2-year extension.
How far are they off? Do they know?
Don't know. Don't know.
I mean, look, I would be a fun little task for a clerk for the SMQBs to go back to all of our pods and talk about times when players at any level, NCAA or pro sports, hijack their team. And some of us have some very strong views about that. When you are under a contract and you have shaken a hand and you have signed your name to an agreement, play it out. I don't know. I mean, I do think there are some times where players can rightfully say, I'm underpaid and this isn't right and I want an extension. I just think the way Jimmy's going about it is the wrong way to do it.
Wrong way. I agree. It's the wrong way. It's also the wrong time because the NBA is different than it was when LeBron felt like he could put teams together on his own. They now have this new, collective bargaining agreement with aprons that I don't quite fully understand, but at this point, because the, teams like the Suns are in the second apron, they couldn't trade a collection of players to match Butler's salary. They'd have to trade somebody with an equivalent salary in order to get Butler. And you know they're not going to trade their two stars, right? KD and Devin. So that means Bradley Beal. And who in their fucking right mind wants 2 years of Bradley Beal's max contract and a no trade clause? I mean, that's. I don't see how the Suns get that done, even though everyone's pointing to the Suns as the best spot, landing spot for Jimmy Butler. Nobody's going to take Bradley Beal off their hands. So we'll see. We'll see. I did want to talk about the 2025 Major League Baseball Hall of Fame class, because it kind of harkens back to one of our episodes where we introduced our listeners to the Black Aces, African-American pitchers who have at least one 20-game win season. There are currently two Black Aces in the Hall of Fame, Bob Gibson and Ferguson Jenkins, and CeCe Sabathia is joining them as the third. And he was a hell of a pitcher, just a workhorse. And I just wanted to congratulate him for joining the other two Black Aces. There are many who you would think would be in but aren't, like Don Newcomb and Vida Blue and others. J.R. Richard definitely would have if his health held up. But anyway, congratulations to CeCe. We already congratulated Ichiro. Billy Wagner got in, and then the committee, the classic baseball era committee, we spoke about this earlier in December, voted in Dick Allen and Dave Parker, who were long overdue. This is a good class, the class of 25, and I'd love to go watch that induction.
It is a good class. You know, sometimes you hear the name of a reliever and you think, really? But when you actually peel it back and you look at, like, kind of thinking back on it, Wagner was pretty much a lights out guy. There was a short stint in Philly, but much longer in Houston. And I think all these guys really are deserving. We talked about on our text string, if only our fans could ever watch the or see the SMQB's text string. Boy, there's some good gold in there. But we talked about who's on tap potentially for next year. And I don't think we'll be having the same conversation next year. It's a really, really weak class. I'd be surprised really if anybody gets it. So let's celebrate this class, because I think they're all deserving. Unquestionably, CeCe and Ichiro and Wagner are.
Who's the guy
who didn't go for Ichiro, by the way? That's annoying.
I don't think we know.
Seriously.
Yeah, that is annoying. The big beef in New York Yankees land is that Andy Pettit is not in. And you know, he had a little sniff of the juicing era.
Yeah.
He admitted to using once when he was injured to get over an injury. Anyway,
27.9% in his seventh year. I'm not sure that's going to cut it long term.
Not all those guys. A-Rod
got 7.1 in his fourth.
Manny Ramirez is 34.
A-Rod might be moving. I mean, it's kind of hard to know.
I think there's. I mean, I don't know. I think there can a distinction can be made between performance enhancement and injury recovery, but maybe that's just splitting hairs.
Right. Hey, Rooster, but before you go on, I think for new fans, we'll hear about our punchable face and lasso segments and stuff like that. I wanted to go back for a second. I don't know if you still plan to talk about the coaching carousel in the NFL, but I was curious who you guys think got the best of the lot of the recent picks and the worst of the lot of the recent picks. Because I think now we have, you know, the Jets and the Bears and the Cowboys. And I think the Saints are about to name a head coach. I'm not sure if I missed anybody so far. I suppose you could say, in a way, you know, the Giants stood pat. So
who hired Pete Campbell?
Oh, Pete Carroll in Vegas. Yeah, you've got that. Pete Carroll in the Raiders. So you got that too. So who's winner and loser?
I would say Vrabel to the Pats. That's
Vrabel to the Pats. That's right.
Yeah, that's a good fit. I do think Ben Johnson is a good fit for the Bears, and I'm very curious to know who is this young guy he hired to join him. He's like the youngest coordinator in all of football. His new offensive coordinator Declan something.
I don't know.
He was like the tight ends coach on the Broncos the last 2 years. and is now going to be the offensive coordinator of the Bears. So that'll be interesting.
He's got his work cut out for him in that division, to be sure.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, I know we like to really ride Pope as much as we can for Dallas Cowboys. I just don't get it.
Shoddy.
I don't get it. Maybe it'll surprise us all. Is it just that it has to be a yes man? Is that part of why you can't get others?
100%.
People don't want to work there.
People do not want to come and subjugate themselves to the whims of Jerry Jones. And I'm telling you guys, watch this press conference, just a couple snippets you'll see on social media. I mean, what a fucking train wreck. And I feel bad for Schottenheimer, right? I mean, he's 51. Obviously, he's got the great pedigree of his dad. And he's been, a coordinator for 13 different assignments or whatever, and never really been considered for head coach.
Well, isn't there a reason for that?
Well, yeah.
51-year-old. I mean, the other guy I was talking about, Declan, is Declan Doyle, and he's 28 years old.
Wow.
So Schottenheimer, the world is going to be against him, including the Cowboys fans, because they're just apoplectic at what's happening. And so I feel bad for him. I will support him, like I do every fucking Cowboy coach. It's not his fault if they fail. It's our milk. You were talking about it. It takes an owner and a GM, solid ownership and GM, to get you to a Super Bowl. And we haven't had that since Jimmy left. There's a fucking reason we don't have a Super Bowl since then.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, to that point, I was very impressed. And I think I want to say Brady is having some influence, but I was impressed with the Raiders' decisions. I think they needed a Pete Carroll after really a train wreck of coaches over the last 10 years. And they also, and the reason I say Brady might be involved, they hired John Spytek, who's the Bucks assistant GM with Jason Light. And he is outstanding. They have a very good GM now. And I just wonder if there was a Brady connection there. But I was impressed by the Raiders. I think they
lost your OC. How's that going to go?
I was going to save that for the punchable face of the week.
I think we might be there.
We are there. So for our new fans for episode 200, we have a segment called Punchable Face of the Week. And we don't literally punch anyone, although we'd like to. But we pick out some bad actors in the world of sports and give them a figurative punch. So, Milk, who are you punching? Call it a comeback.
So, look, I don't ever, get mad at somebody for taking a head coaching job in the NFL, right? There's only 31 of them or 32 or whatever. When the opportunity comes, you take it. But I'm very pissed off at our offensive coordinator, Liam Cohen, the way he went about and did this. And by the way, I do think it's a stupid decision because he has a great job in Tampa. But if you don't know the story, essentially he interviewed in Jacksonville. I guess he didn't like their GM, came back to Tampa. We offered to pay him like $5 million to be our offensive coordinator, which is ridiculous. Jacksonville fires their GM because no one wanted to work for him. And that's where it gets really pisses me off. Liam Cohen, basically the Bucks start calling saying, all right, we got your contract ready. You committed to us. Let's get it going. And he's shuts down his phone, ignores them, secretly goes back to Jacksonville, interviews with this god awful owner who people say is one of the worst owners in the NFL, and goes and accepts this job. And I don't know what they're paying him, $9 million, double what the Bucks were. But it was the way the Bucks are pissed off. He committed back to them, then ignored them, and then went and signed with someone else when there was a contract ready for him. I thought it was a shitty move. And I don't blame a guy for going to take a head coaching position. Again, when you get the opportunity, you take it. But do it with some class. Like, speak to your head coach, speak to your GM, speak to your owner and say, this is what my plan is now. Sorry, I hated that GM in Jacksonville. They fired him. Now I want to go. I just think he went around it the wrong way. I want to punch him in the face. And it was a stupid idea. You're going to work for an awful franchise. Fuck Trevor Lawrence. You had a great thing here. I don't know if you're going to get any support up there. Good luck. And
wow.
Have an offense.
That's milk.
Wow, I haven't seen milk this exercised ever.
Wow.
Wow. We get what we call a milk slap out of milk.
This is no. This is full punch.
Like full rage induced punch.
Who wants to go work in Jacksonville? God. I don't know.
Any other punches?
Yeah. Can I offer? Oh, you go ahead, Pope.
So normally we actually have a person that we can identify or a team or something, but I'm going to be punching anonymous. And you guys probably will figure it out once I say this, but the Hall of Fame voting for baseball, as all the other Hall of Fames are, and they probably should be, are anonymous unless the columnist or sports writer comes out and says, you know, who I voted for. Rooster? Ichiro, was he unanimous?
Nope. No. One person.
How many people voted against him?
One.
I'm punching the fucking anonymous guy.
Yes.
Female. Voted against Ichiro. Unbelievable. In fact, why don't you come out and explain yourself? If you're going to vote against somebody like Ichiro, come out and explain yourself. We'd love you.
I agree.
Love to have you on the pod so we can ask you some questions. Until then,
somebody did that to Derek Jeter too, right? He wasn't unanimous.
No, he wasn't. He got three people did that to him.
This is one.
One person, just to be a dick.
So I'm punching anonymous.
Rooster alluded to the milk slap. Sometimes our rage falls just a little short of what Milk and Pope just had. I want to be consistent because, you know, I don't like the whole Josh Harris vagabond. I'll take the Devils. I'll take the Commanders. I'll take the Eagles. This is a very difficult slap for me to do considering we just won the NFC Championship. There are a lot of rumors today that one Jeffrey Lurie may buy the Boston Celtics.
Ooh.
Oh.
Didn't even realize they were for sale.
Yep.
Boston team?
Oh now he is from Boston, and he actually at one point when it sounded like Kraft was going to sell the Patriots, that's the team that he originally wanted, and he couldn't get the Patriots, and so he moved out of Massachusetts to get the Eagles. So if anything, he left Boston to come to Philadelphia. But now having been entrenched here and done what he's done, and given how much Philly hates Boston, boy, would this be a real interesting turnabout. So I'm just going to say, since he's put in a bid for consideration, I'm going to just give a slap to deter him from going any further with this. Because if it goes further, we may be revisiting this here.
That's a threat, sounds like.
Wow.
Slap.
Don't go any further.
Sounds like a conditional punch.
Wow.
It's
a slap.
That would be a slap in the face to all Philadelphia to go and buy a Boston team.
It would be tough.
You are totally right.
All right. So to counteract all of this high testosterone aggressiveness and vitriol, we have a segment on the show called Lasso, and it's based on the Ted Lasso show, where we try to find a story that evokes kindness and love in the sports world.
The feel
we often have a hard time coming up with one of these stories. Anyone have one this week?
Barbecue sauce.
Milk, we kind of assigned you to the task. I hope you don't let us down. Or you're going to get your own milk slap.
I looked for one. I didn't find one. Please tell me.
Oh, my God.
You didn't look very hard. Tell us about your kid's little league.
Something.
Nothing. Got nothing.
I got nothing. Little League team's doing great.
Man.
One job. Compelling stories right now. I mean,
just so our fans don't think that all we're filled with is that testosterone rage, I'll just throw the lasso out there that I do think that given what's happened throughout the course of his career, Saquon's story is a pretty good one. I think the final lasso could still come, but the season that he's done, which is really an all-time season, he's about with a very few amount of yards, he's about to have the most yards of any running back for a full season ever of any player. And he's been a one-man wrecking crew. And it's just a good story. The guy just waited and waited and waited for his chance. And as soon as he got his chance, he has been an animal. And he's a humble guy. He's a nice guy. It's hard to say anything. Nobody says, I don't like Saquon, or he's, you know, like, when he scores touchdowns, like he gives, like Barry Sanders, he gives the ball to the referee.
The referee and then shakes somebody's hand. That's his whole celebration.
That's Saquon.
Listen,
and I think
listen,
that's
the guy has had a couple of major knee injuries in his career too.
Oh, yeah, he's overcome
and
a lot of
that. It's amazing that he's performing at this high level.
I guess I could lasso the Eagles owner for wanting to buy a Boston franchise. Let's do that. Good for him.
We could give a lasso to House's wife, who when he tried to get her to say ugly things to Bison, she said, "I can't do that."
We were pregaming. She did. By the way, she made it onto the fan cam in the stadium last night.
All right,
no way.
Good for her.
No way.
It was great.
Nicest Philly chick you'll ever meet.
Are you ready to announce to the SMQB world about whether you're going to be making that trek to NOLA House?
Will you be reporting live?
Will you be
embedded?
I will be embedded along with the entire Milrod clan at the Super Bowl.
Yes. It will be,
the whole family, we couldn't miss it in New Orleans. For our fans, besides Philly, I'm a Tulane guy, got three boys, two of them are at Tulane now. And the fact the Eagles, I said to the guy I've been sharing season tickets with to the Eagles for 30 years, I said, you know, before that game, these crazy Philadelphia fans are going to take over Bourbon Street. The whole Bourbon Street is going to be there in Kelly Green, and I'm going to be openly weeping. I just like, what a moment. Like, how does that happen? But we got to make, listen. We've been saying this pod, and we'll have a Super Bowl preview next week. Everything runs through Kansas City. I mean, this team is a true dynasty. And yes, we did take Brady down before and the Patriots, but I don't know. There's just something about Mahomes that just seems invincible. So we'll see.
Yep. Well, good luck. All right. Yeah. We have the final segment of the show is called Buzzer Beaters, just quick hits. If anybody has anything in the world of sports they want to mention quickly. Anyone have a buzzer, Pope?
Well, as a result of what House said, which I figured would be the case, I want to announce the SMQBs are establishing a GoFundMe for House and his family as they as they're going to need some funds to get down
thank
to
you.
NOLA.
Thank you very much.
I went to the Harbaugh Super Bowl in New Orleans when it was the 49ers against the Ravens.
Oh, the lights went out.
And the lights went out at halftime. I've stayed in some like mediocre room and it was 900 something bucks a night. I mean, all the prices are jacked up. It's just, you just might as well be prepared to.
I would like to thank my son's fraternity in advance for letting me sleep on the couch during the Super Bowl. So,
yep.
Old boy Blue is coming. I'm doing a buzzer for Bison. We've talked about it a couple times, but the watch now is on for Alex Ovechkin breaking this record. It seems like it's going to happen, and it'll make for some fun debating later on the SMQB's pod. But you know, you talk about chasing Maris and chasing Babe Ruth and chasing, like, I know hockey doesn't get all the billing, but this is a really, really big record, a really, really big one. And it's going to be broken probably this year. So
tell the fans what record you're talking about.
Oh, this is Wayne Gretzky's all-time scoring, goal scoring record. And at last count, I don't know, he's 21, 20. So he's within 20 to 23 goals away. It seems like he gets one. And yeah, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me that some of those goals, because I'm sure, I don't know what the number was that Gretzky had that were empty netters. But right now it seems that the Caps, who are playing really, really well, some of these goals are empty netters, and that's okay. It's part of the game of hockey. I don't really care about that. But, you know, Gretzky was a special generational athlete. And I mean athlete. We've talked about that before. And Ovechkin's a very different player. But to topple what is unquestionably the greatest all-time hockey player and one of his records – that will lead to some really fun debating on this. It'll be up there with LeBron, MJ, with Ovechkin, Gretzky. So that's the look ahead buzzer beater for the weeks ahead when this record goes down.
Yeah, that's going to be a moment.
Milk, you got a buzzer beater?
Yes, I do. So a couple things happened. On Saturday, the Florida Gator basketball team beat Georgia to go to 18-2.
Oh, boy.
Today, coincidentally, the University of Florida dropped the investigation against the basketball coach for being a pervert and a stalker. So I don't know if their top five ranking in the dropping of the case are related, but he's in the clear. So we can move forward.
Aren't we past the punchable face of the week segment?
I punched him already, by the way. So he's been... He was cleared today, but it was by the school. So
crazy.
Oh no.
All right. Anything else? Anyone got another buzzer? Listen, good luck, Milk, Hope, and Bison enduring the next 2 weeks of House's insanity leading up to the Super Bowl. I know. We're gonna need it. We're gonna have to
Guys, while you still like me, here's a lasso to the five of us for making it to episode 200.
Yeah,
it's a really good story for all of us. It's been a joy to be with you.
It really
guys.
Has. Cheers.
Thanks. Cheers, y'all.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.